Welcome to the podcast. Before we get into today's news, we need to talk about the weather, because there is a serious alert you need to be aware of. That's right. The National Weather Service in Grand Rapids has just issued a warning that storms are moving into southwest Michigan, and there is an increasing risk for severe weather over the next couple of hours. If you are listening to this right now, make sure you have your local alerts turned on and be prepared to take protective action if a severe thunderstorm or tornado warning is issued for your immediate area. It's deceiving because right now, current conditions in downtown Grand Rapids are actually beautiful. It's sitting at 73 degrees, feeling like 72, with just a few scattered clouds and a light 6 mile per hour breeze coming in from the northeast. But don't let that fool you into a false sense of security. Exactly. Looking ahead, tomorrow's forecast shows a high near 76 degrees, with a 20% chance of rain throughout the day. We'll see temperatures drop down to about 49 degrees by tomorrow morning before they rebound back into the 70s by the evening. It is that classic, volatile spring weather pattern for West Michigan. It is tough to balance enjoying these warmer-than-average temperatures with the sudden reality of life safety weather alerts. So please, stay vigilant tonight. Absolutely. Keep an eye on the sky. Moving on to our main stories today, we're taking a close look at a major infrastructure move by Consumers Energy to combat storm outages, and a bipartisan push from former state party leaders to fundamentally change how Michigan politics operate.
Let's start with the power grid. Consumers Energy has announced a significant plan to install 100 company-owned weather stations across Michigan by the end of 2027. The primary goal here is to drastically improve their outage prediction capabilities and speed up power restoration times.
This is a really fascinating localized approach to infrastructure management. Historically, utilities have largely relied on data from the National Weather Service. The problem with that is those federal stations are often located at airports or major municipal centers. That means they might be miles away from the actual power lines that are getting battered by a storm. By installing these new stations directly on poles right near their low-voltage distribution lines, Consumers Energy is going to get hyper-local data that reflects exactly what the grid is experiencing.
And the specific metrics they are measuring are crucial. They are looking at wind speed and temperature, of course, but they are also measuring soil moisture. That soil moisture component is a massive deal in Michigan. When you combine heavily saturated ground with high wind gusts, you get uprooted trees. And falling trees are one of the primary causes of downed power lines and widespread outages.
Right. Haley Vaughn, who is a senior meteorological data analyst at Consumers Energy, specifically noted that having real-time weather data directly from their own grid helps them anticipate where outages will occur. It allows them to plan their restoration efforts and stage crews in the right places before a storm even hits its peak. It's a shift from being purely reactive to being proactive.
The financial projections attached to this are notable as well. The utility estimates this program will save customers nearly $1 million annually through more efficient crew deployment. But I do have to wonder about that figure. $1 million a year is certainly a positive, but in the context of Consumers Energy's overall operational budget and the massive capital costs associated with storm restoration, it's a relatively small fraction. I agree. I suspect the real value here isn't just the raw dollar savings on the balance sheet, but the boost in customer satisfaction and grid resilience. This initiative is part of their broader reliability roadmap, which includes an incredibly ambitious goal to restore power to all customers within 24 hours of any given outage. Given the severe weather we've experienced over the last few years, hitting that 24-hour mark consistently is going to require exactly this kind of technological upgrade.
There are some logistical hurdles to clear before they get there, though. Right now, only 5 of these 100 planned stations are actually active. They are currently operating in Barry, Clare, Gladwin, Jackson, and Ojemaw counties. Scaling from 5 stations to 100 across their entire service territory by 2027 is going to require a massive deployment effort.
It also raises some really interesting questions about data sharing. Currently, Consumers Energy is using this hyper-local weather data strictly internally. But what happens if they eventually decide to share it publicly or integrate it with local municipal emergency systems?
That could be a huge benefit for local emergency management. If a county 911 dispatcher knows exactly what the wind speeds are in a very specific rural township because of a utility pole sensor, they can route first responders much more effectively. On the flip side, it opens up questions about data privacy and the physical security of the grid infrastructure. If the public has real-time access to exactly where the grid is experiencing the most stress, does that present a vulnerability? Still, it's clear that major utilities are realizing they can no longer just react to the weather. They have to integrate advanced meteorological data directly into their hardware. We'll definitely be tracking their progress toward that 100-station target over the next 3 years. For our second deep dive, we're looking at a major development in Michigan's political landscape. A bipartisan group of former state party leaders is publicly calling for an end to the state's nominating conventions. This is a really fascinating alliance because you rarely see this level of cross-party agreement on election mechanics. You have former Michigan Republican Party chairs Saul Anuzis and Ron Weiser teaming up with former Democratic Party chair Mark Brewer. They co-authored a recent op-ed arguing that the convention system has become, in their exact words, unrepresentative and chaotic. To give our listeners some context on how this works, Michigan currently uses a hybrid system for its elections. We use standard primary elections where the general public votes to pick candidates for governor and the state legislature. But the major parties use closed conventions to nominate their candidates for crucial statewide offices, including the Attorney General, the Secretary of State, and Supreme Court justices. And the core argument these former party chairs are making is that these closed conventions heavily favor fringe activists, because turnout at a party convention is limited to a relatively small group of highly engaged, deeply partisan delegates. The candidates who ultimately win the nomination often cater to the most extreme ends of the political spectrum. The authors argue this dynamic routinely results in candidates who struggle to appeal to the broader electorate in a general election. Their proposed solution is a complete shift to a standard primary-based system for these remaining statewide offices. But that brings up a really important ongoing debate in political science. Does moving to a primary system actually result in more moderate, electable candidates? That is the million-dollar question. Proponents of primary elections say yes, because you are expanding the voter base from a few thousand hardcore convention delegates to hundreds of thousands of regular voters. But critics argue that primaries don't necessarily moderate the field. They just shift the influence away from grassroots activists and hand it over to well-funded special interest groups. Statewide primary campaigns are incredibly expensive. Exactly. If you have to run a television advertising campaign across the entire state of Michigan just to win the party nomination for attorney general, you are going to need massive financial backing. And what does this mean for third parties or unconventional grassroots candidates? Conventions, for all their documented chaos, do provide a venue where a candidate with very little money but incredible organizing skills can outmaneuver an establishment favorite. Eliminating that system might permanently close the door on candidates who can't raise millions of dollars up front.
There is also the question of party building. Conventions are undeniably messy, but they serve as a vital venue for the political parties to gather, network, and build enthusiasm among their core volunteers. If you remove that massive statewide gathering from the calendar, there is a real risk that you might weaken the state party infrastructure even further at a time when traditional parties are already losing influence.
It is worth noting that the frustration with conventions isn't just theoretical. We have seen some highly publicized, deeply chaotic conventions in Michigan over the last few election cycles that have left party leadership absolutely scrambling. This bipartisan op-ed is clearly a direct reaction to that recent history.
It will be very interesting to see if the state legislature takes this seriously. Changing the nomination process would require legislative action, and it is historically difficult to convince politicians to change the rules of the game they are currently playing. But when you have heavyweights like Weiser and Anuzis and Brewer all pushing in the exact same direction, it certainly has the potential to move the needle. All right, we've got a few more stories to get through before we wrap up today. Let's hit the roundup.
Sounds good. We've got an update on local strict liability laws, some local sports scores, and a look at festival travel logistics. First up, over on the Grand Rapids subreddit, a local resident posted a plea for help after their dog was severely attacked by a neighbor's dog that broke loose. The user noted the neighbor offered no apology or financial help for the vet bills, and animal control simply took a report and left. This highlights a really common frustration with local enforcement. But from a civil standpoint, Michigan law is very strict. Under MCL 287.351, dog owners have strict liability for injuries caused by their pets, assuming the victim wasn't trespassing or provoking the animal. Right, and it is important to note that Michigan does not have a one-bite rule. Owners can be held fully liable for a first-time attack. Victims can pursue civil lawsuits for damages, like veterinary bills and psychological trauma. Though the practical barrier of suing a neighbor over a few hundred dollars often leaves people feeling stuck. Moving to local sports, the West Michigan Whitecaps recently had their impressive 7-game winning streak snapped. On April 21st, they fell to the Lake County Captains by a score of 4-2. The Whitecaps are the defending Midwest League champions, and this matchup is always heavily watched, since it is a direct rematch of the 2025 Midwest League East Division Championship Series. Absolutely. Despite the loss breaking their streak, the early season performance from West Michigan has been strong. Their pitching staff has been racking up high strikeout counts, which sets a very aggressive tone for the rest of the 2026 season.
Finally, the Muskegon County Airport is making a big push to encourage air travel for attendees of the upcoming Electric Forest Festival. The regional airport is served by Denver Air Connection, which runs daily flights to Chicago O'Hare.
Electric Forest is held in Rothbury, which is only about 30 minutes away from the Muskegon Airport. But what's interesting is that the official festival shuttles only operate out of larger hubs like Grand Rapids, Chicago, and Detroit.
Right. Muskegon isn't listed as a primary shuttle hub, so while it is geographically much closer to the venue, attendees flying into Muskegon will have to figure out how to bridge that final 30-minute gap to the festival grounds on their own, which might limit how many people actually take advantage of the route.
And that is going to wrap up our show for today. Thanks to everyone for listening and keeping up with what's happening around West Michigan. Be sure to stay weather aware tonight with those potential severe storms rolling in. We'll be back next time with more local news and analysis. Stay safe.